took me to this place in the country, a friend's summer house in the Laurel Highlands. She gave me space, but not too much. She gave me time, long, quiet walks, long, crying jags, midnight baking sessions with tequila shots. God, oh, God, she's the most wonderful woman.
I'd like to meet her.
Maybe you will. She gave me a month, and then she asked me what I wanted to do with my life. The stars are coming out. We should walk back.
They turned, walking now with the evening breeze at their backs. What did you tell her?
I told her I wanted to live at the beach. I wanted to see the ocean every day. I told her I wanted to help people, but I couldn't face going back to an office, going back to appointments and meetings and strategy sessions. I blubbered because I was sure she'd be disappointed in me. I had the education, the skills, the experience to make a difference. I had been making a difference, and now I just wanted to see the ocean every day.
You were wrong about her being disappointed.
I was wrong. She said I should find my place and I should live my life in a way that satisfied me, that made me happy. So I came here and I found ways to make myself happy and satisfied. I might not be here doing what I really love if Derek hadn't broken me.
He didn't break you. I don't believe in fate and destiny and absolutes, but sometimes it smacks you in the face. You're where you're meant to be because you're meant to be here. I think you'd have found your way.
And that's a nice thought.
She stood on the bottom beach step, turned to him, laid her hands on his shoulders.
I've been happy here, and more open here than I ever was before. I made a very deliberate decision a year or so ago to go on my sexual fast because, though I'd met some very nice men, none of them fulfilled that part of me that may have been damaged more than I admitted. It's a lot to lay on you, Eli, but I'd really appreciate it if you'd help me break my fast.
Now?
I was thinking now would be good.
She leaned in to kiss him.
If you wouldn't mind.
Well, you did make soup.
And bread,
she reminded him. This seems like the least I can do. We ought to go in the house first. He cleared his throat as they started up the steps. I'm gonna have to make a quick trip to the village. I didn't bring any protection. I haven't been thinking much about sex until recently.
No problem. And no need for the trip. I put a box of condoms in your bedroom the other day. I've been thinking about sex recently.
He let out a breath. Oh, you are the best housekeeper I've ever had.
Oh, Eli, you haven't seen anything yet.
13.
Out of practice,
he thought, with some nerves as they climbed the beach steps, and he wasn't entirely convinced sex was like riding a damn bike. Sure, the basics remained the basics, but the process required moves, technique, timing, finesse, tone. He liked to think he'd been pretty good at it once. Nobody'd complained, including Lindsay.
Still, we're going to stop thinking about it,
Abra announced when they reached the door.
I'm messing up my head, and I'll lay odds you're messing up yours.
Maybe.
So let's stop thinking.
She peeled off her hoodie, hung it on a peg, then grabbed his jacket, yanked it off his shoulders as she pulled herself in, as she fixed her mouth on his. His brain didn't explode out the top of his head, but it sure as hell banged around in there.
That's how it works,
she said as she tugged his jacket off, hung it up. Yeah, it's coming back to me. He grabbed her hand, pulled her along with him. I don't want to do this in the laundry room or on the kitchen floor, and they're both looking pretty good to me right now. With a laugh, she spun into him, took his mouth again as she flipped open buttons on his shirt.
No reason not to get started on the way.
Well, that's a point. She wore a soft blue pullover, or did until he yanked it up and off, tossed it behind them as they arrowed toward the stairs. She pulled at his belt. He dragged at the skinny white tank she wore under the pullover, and both of them tripped on the base of the stairs. They teetered, groped.
Maybe we'd better get up there,
she managed. Good idea. He grabbed her hand again. They raced up, like a couple of kids, he'd think later, running toward the big shiny gift under the Christmas tree. Except most kids didn't try to rip each other's clothes off while they ran. Out of breath, he finally stripped off her white tank as they hurtled into the bedroom.
Oh, God, look at you. Look later.
She slid his belt free, let it fall to the floor with a clunk. He knew they couldn't dive into the bed, not literally, but he figured they came pretty damn close. He forgot about moves, timing, technique. He sure as hell forgot finesse, but she didn't seem to mind. He wanted those soft, pretty breasts in his hands, the femininity of the shape, the smoothness of skin. He wanted his mouth on them, the leap of her heart against his lips and tongue, the grip of her hand in his hair as she pressed him against her, as her body bowed up to his like an offering. He gorged himself on the scent of her, that goddess of the sea scent that brought mermaids and sirens to his mind. That sleek, sculpted body vibrated with energy, infused his own. As they rolled over the bed, grasping, groaning, he felt he could do anything, be anything, have anything. She yearned. She ached. Everything felt frantic, fast, fabulous. His hands on her body, hers on his. She knew the lines of him, the shape, but now she could take, now she could feel. Not to soothe or comfort, but to ignite. She wanted to fire him and have the blaze consume them both. All the needs, good, strong, healthy needs, she'd locked away, broke free in a crazed stampede that trampled any thought of restraint or caution. She couldn't get enough, ravaged his mouth in her quest to feed and fill, but the hunger only grew keener, like a blade whetted on a speeding wheel. She all but clawed her way on top of him to sink her teeth into his shoulder, lost her breath as he flipped her back again and found her white-hot center with his fingers. The orgasm ripped through her, a glorious shock. Dazzled and drugged with it, she groped for him.
God, God, please, no.
Thank you, Jesus, he thought, because it had to be now. When he drove himself into her, the earth didn't simply move. It quaked. The world shook. The air thundered. And his body lit up, then erupted with triumph and pleasure, with a desperate, dizzying demand for more. She clung to him, arms and legs locked in the wild ride full of sound and speed. Fast, rhythmic slaps of flesh to heat-slicked flesh, the crazed creak of the bed. The pants of labored breath overrode the lazy beat of the sea to shore, whispering at the windows. He felt himself fall away, just fall away into that whirl of sound, into the rush, into the stupefying pleasure, into her. He'd have sworn he flew too far, too high, into a moment of exquisite pain before he just emptied. They didn't move. It had gone dark sometime during the race to the bedroom and the sprint to the finish line, but he wasn't entirely sure he hadn't been struck blind. Better to stay just as he was for the time being. Besides, the sensation of her body beneath his, sleek and toned and absolutely still, felt so damn good. Though she'd gone lax, her heart continued to rage against his. The rapid beat made him feel like a god.
And I wasn't sure I'd pull it off.
Oh, you pulled it way off. I may never get it on again.
He blinked.
Did I say that out loud?
A laugh rumbled in her throat.
Oh, I won't hold it against you. I wasn't sure either of us would pull it off. I feel like I must be glowing. I can't understand why I'm not illuminating the whole room like a torch.
I think we went blind.
When she felt him shift, Abra opened her eyes, looked into the glint of his.
No, I can see you. It's just dark. There's only a quarter moon tonight.
I feel like I landed on it.
Ah, A trip to the moon.
It made her smile as she brushed at his hair.
I like it. All I need now is some water, before I die of thirst, and maybe some food before we try for the return trip.
I can supply the water. I keep some in the... He rolled over, reached out for the nightstand, and ended up on the floor.
What the hell? Are you okay?
She scrambled to the edge of the bed to stare down at him.
Why are you on the floor?
I don't know.
Where's the lamp? Where's the nightstand?
I don't know. Did we end up in an alternate universe? He rubbed his hip as he got to his feet and stood straining to see while his eyes adjusted to the dark.
Something's not right. The terrace doors are supposed to be over there, but they're over there, and the...
Wait a minute! Cautious, he moved in the darkened room, cursed when his toe stubbed against a chair, skirted it, then groped for the bedside lamp. The light flashed on.
Why am I over here?
She asked him. Because the bed's over there. It was over here, and now it's over there and turned sideways.
We moved the bed?
It was over here, he repeated, then walked back to her. Now it's over here. He got back in as she sat up beside him. Both of them sat, studying the empty space between the two nightstands.
That's a lot of pent-up sexual energy,
she decided. I'd say massive amounts.
Has this ever happened to you before? It's a first.
Me too. He turned, grinned at her.
I'm gonna mark it down on the calendar.
Laughing, she twined her arms around his neck.
Let's leave it here for now, see if we can move it back again later.
There are a lot of other beds in this house. We could experiment. I think... Oh, shit! Shit! Pent up sexual energy, Abra, the bed's here, the nightstand, and the condoms are over there! I didn't think... I couldn't think.
We're okay. I'm on birth control. How long have you been storing up your sexual energy?
Some over a year.
Same here. I think that area of safety's covered, so to speak. Why don't we hydrate, eat, then see what else we can move?
I really like the way your mind works. She was right about the soup. It was exceptional. He'd begun to think she was very rarely wrong about anything. They sat at the kitchen island, he in flannel pants and a sweatshirt, Abra in one of his grandmother's robes. Eating soup, hunks of bread, drinking wine, talking about movies she claimed he had to see, or books they'd both read. He told her about his find in the house's library. It's interesting, definitely written by a woman with a male pseudonym.
That sounds biased and a little snarky.
Not meant that way, he claimed. Writer's a word without gender. But this struck me as female, especially given the era it was written in. It's a little flowery, definitely romantic. I liked it, even if it should have been labeled fiction.
I'd like to be the judge of that. Can I borrow it?
Sure. I thought, given the trench, I'd take a pass through the library here, read what we've got on the legend, the Calypso, on Nathaniel Broom and my ancestor Violetta.
Now that's a project I can get behind. I always meant to ask Hester if I could borrow some of the books, but never did. I tend toward fiction or self-help.
Since he considered her one of the most self-aware and contented women he'd ever met, he had to ask, what help does your self need?
Depends on the day. But when I first moved here, I still felt a little unsteady. I read a lot of books on finding balance, dealing with trauma.
He laid a hand over hers. I don't want to bring back bad memories, but I want to ask how long he got.
20 years. The prosecutor was pushing for rape, battery, attempted murder, and he would have faced life. So they pleaded it down to aggravated sexual assault, adding in the knife, and held to the maximum. I didn't think he'd take it, but...
Factor in the stalking, the premeditation, and breaking into your place? Eyewitnesses and your neighbors, he was smart to take it. How are you about the 20?
I'm good with it. Satisfied with it. When he comes up for parole, I intend to go in, speak to the board. I intend to take the photos of me after the assault. I like to think it's not vindictive, but...
It's not.
I don't really care if it is, and I've made peace with my own needs on it. I do know I feel lighter with him in prison, and I'll do what I can to keep him there, away from me, away from someone else he might focus on. So I found my balance, and every now and then I like a little boost, or something that opens me up to a different way of thinking.
With a smile, she spooned up more soup.
How's your balance, Eli?
Right now I feel like I could do handsprings across a tightrope. She laughed into her wine.
Sex is the best invention.
No argument here.
Maybe you should write some sex into your book, unless you think it's too female and flowery.
I sense a challenge.
Wouldn't you like your hero to find his balance in the end?
She leaned over, brushed her lips lightly to his.
I'd love to help you with your research.
I'd be a fool to say no. Eyes on hers, he slid his hand up her thigh. The kitchen floor still looks good.
We should see how it feels.
As she angled toward him, the doorbell chimed.
Damn it! Hold that thought.
He found Vinny at the door and realized he hadn't hit balance when the sight of a cop, even an old friend, still made his heart lurch.
Hey, Vinny! Eli, I had a call out this way and was heading back in since my shift's up. I wanted to stop by to... Oh, hi, Abs.
Hi, Vinny.
She stepped up beside Eli.
Coming out of the cold.
Oh, well, bad timing. I can talk to you tomorrow, Eli.
Come on in, Vinny. We were just having some soup Abra made.
Do you want a bowl?
She asked him.
No, thanks. No, I had a dinner break a couple hours ago, and,
I've got Eli in twice-weekly massages,
Abra said easily.
And I'm making sure he eats, which is something he's been neglecting. And we're having sex. That's a new development.
Okay. Jesus, Abra. Man.
Why don't you go in and sit down with Eli? I'll get you some coffee.
I don't want to get in the way.
Too late,
Abra said as she walked off. Eli just grinned after her.
She's amazing. Yeah, well... Look, Eli, I like you. At least I liked you back in the day, and I'm inclined to like you now. Just don't mess up with her.
I'll be working hard not to. Well, we might as well go in and sit down. He turned toward the parlor, stopped when Vinny studied the massage table. She won't take no.
Oh, not on much.
Vinny hooked his thumbs in his uniform belt.
Anyway, Eli, I know Detectives Corbett and Wolf came to see you.
Yeah, we had an interesting chat earlier.
Corbett's straight and smart and thorough. I don't know Wolf, but it's pretty clear he's got his teeth in this bone, and he's not giving it up.
He's had his teeth in me for a year. Eli dropped down on the sofa. I've got the scars.
He's gonna chomp them into Abra now, and into me.
I'm sorry, Vinny. Vinny shook his head, lowered to a chair.
I'm not looking for sorry, but I figured you should know he's gonna do what he can to discredit Abra as your alibi and take a swing at me as I play into it.
He's a bully.
Abra walked in with a mug of coffee.
A dangerous one, I think.
Vinny took the coffee, stared into it.
He's a hard-nosed, experienced cop with a pretty solid rep. My take, coming up against you, Eli, when his gut and the circumstantial says you're guilty as black-eyed sin, and not being able to prove it's got him pissed.
I can't be guilty of murder just to keep his record clear.
He knew Duncan.
I got that.
I haven't looked deep, but my sense is they knew each other pretty well. So now he's got more motivation to break you down, and this time you've got an alibi.
Which would be me.
And you,
Vinny said to Abra.
He's gonna see as a liar, protecting your...
The word these days is lover,
Abra put in.
He can try to discredit me. He's doomed to failure. And I can see on your face you're thinking it was easier and clearer when I wasn't sleeping with Eli. We've complicated things, but the truth's still the truth, Vinny.
I just want you to know he's gonna stir things up. He'll dig. He's already dug as far as can be dug with Eli, so you need to expect him to do the same on you, Abs.
It doesn't worry me. Eli knows about Derek, Vinny.
Okay.
With a nod, Vinny drank some coffee.
I don't want you worried. Just prepared.
I appreciate it.
Have they run ballistics? Eli asked him.
I can't give you details of the investigation.
Benny shrugged, drank more coffee.
Your grandmother's got a nice antique gun collection upstairs. She let me see it once. I don't recall any .32 calibers up there.
No, Eli said just as casually. Nothing like that in the collection, or in the house.
Well, I'd better get going. Thanks for the coffee, Abra.
Anytime.
Eli rose to walk him to the door. I appreciate you coming by like this, Vinny. I won't forget it.
You look out for her. She knows just how vicious people can be, but she's still inclined to think they won't be. Stay out of trouble.
I thought I was, Eli mused, but trouble had a way of wiggling its way through the smallest opening. When he stepped back into the parlor, she straightened from adding a log to the fire. Then she turned, flames licking and rising behind her back. However it happened, he began, whoever's to blame, you being here, being with me, puts you in the crosshairs. Your personal life, what happened to you, choices you've made, your work, your family, your friends, all of everything is going to be turned over, dug into, examined, talked about. You've been through something like this once, and you put it behind you, but staying here will put it in front of you again.
That's true. And?
You should take some time to think about that, to decide if you really want to put yourself under that kind of scrutiny. Her gaze stayed calm and quiet on his.
Which means you don't think I have thought about it, and doesn't say much for your opinion of my sense of self or my ability to reason out consequences for actions.
That's not what I meant.
You're not going to save me from myself, Eli. I do fine in that area. I'm not opposed to you looking out for me, because I believe, strongly, people should look out for each other. But Vinny's wrong. Voices carry in empty houses, and I have excellent hearing.
She pointed out.
I do know how vicious people can be, but I'm not inclined to think they won't be. I'm inclined to hope they won't be, and that's very different.
They usually are, given half a chance.
It's a shame you feel that way. But given what's happened, what's happening now, it's hard to blame you. Still, we could have an interesting debate on that subject sometime. But right now, do you want to know what I think?
Yeah, I do.
I think, while the kitchen floor looks good, that couch looks even better. Want to try it out and see?
Yeah. He walked toward her. I do. She stayed. When they finally made it back to bed, finally exhausted themselves, she learned he wasn't a snuggler. But he earned half a point, rather than a full one in her scorebook, by not objecting to snuggling. She woke in light like a gray pearl, when he shifted to ease away from her.
You getting up?
Yeah, sorry I woke you.
It's okay.
But she curled around him again.
What time is it?
About 6. You should go back to sleep.
I have an 8 o'clock class.
She nuzzled at his throat.
What's on your plate?
Usually coffee and work. But he could adjust that, he thought, and ran a hand down her long, bare back.
And then you have time to join me for a short morning stretch, and I'll fix you breakfast as a reward before I go.
We can stretch right here. She didn't object when he rolled over, slipped inside her. Instead, she sighed deep, smiled into his eyes.
Oh, a wonderful way to salute the sun.
Slow and easy, like floating on a quiet sea. The lazy counterpoint to the night's rush and thunder slid through her like the sunrise, like that promise of the fresh and the new and the hopeful. She could see him now, the lines of his face, the clarity of his eyes with the dark trouble still shadowed in them. Her nature urged her to banish shadows, to bring the light. So she gave herself to him for his pleasure, for her own. She took that gentle ride up the crest, down again, and watched for a moment, for their moment, that light burned through. She lay with him, wrapped around him, and basked in that moment.
You should think about me today.
He turned his head to brush his lips against her throat.
I think the odds are pretty good on that.
Deliberately think of me today, she amended. Say around noon, and I'll deliberately think of you. We'll send strong, positive, sexy thoughts into the universe.
He lifted his head.
Sexy thoughts into the universe.
It couldn't hurt. Where do writers and artists and inventors and all the creative people get their ideas?
She lifted her hands, circled her index fingers in the air.
Is that where they come from?
They're out there.
Lowering her hands, she ran her fingers in a firm line down his spine, up again.
People have to open up, reach for them. Positive or negative thoughts, it's up to you. One of the ways to grab the good ones is to start the day opening up.
I think we accomplished that.
Step two.
She nudged him aside, made a dash toward the bathroom.
See if you can hunt me up a pair of sweatpants or shorts. Drawstrings would work. I'm using one of the spare toothbrushes stocked in the cabinet in here.
Okay. She'd know more about the amenities than he did, he figured, as she'd probably put them in there. He found a pair of shorts with a drawstring and dragged on a pair of sweats himself. They're gonna be too big, he told her when she came out.
I'll make do.
She pulled them on, began adjusting them.
You can meet me in the gym.
Oh, I really...
We've spent considerable time naked and intimate, Eli.
Hard to argue when she stood there in his shorts, naked from the waist up.
I think breathing and stretching comes pretty low on the list of embarrassments.
She grabbed her white tank, wiggled into it.
I need a hair tie. Got one in my bag. In the gym,
she repeated, and left him. Maybe he stalled a little. It wasn't embarrassment, he told himself. He just preferred starting the day with coffee, like normal people. But he found her in the gym, sitting cross-legged on one of the two yoga mats she'd laid out, her hands on her knees, her eyes closed. She should have looked ridiculous in his shorts. So why did she look sexy and peaceful and just exactly right? Eyes still closed, she reached over and patted the second mat.
Sit down. Be comfortable. Take a couple minutes to breathe.
I usually breathe all day. At night, too. Her lips curved a little.
Conscious breathing now. In through the nose, expanding the belly like blowing up a balloon. Out through the nose, deflating the balloon. Long, deep, even breaths. Belly rises and falls. Relax your mind.
He didn't think he was very good at relaxing his mind, unless he was writing. And that wasn't relaxing it, but using it. He'd get coffee quicker if he breathed, though.
Now, inhale your arms up until your palms touch. Exhale them down. Inhale up.
She continued in that quiet, soothing voice.
Exhale down.
She had him stretch over his crossed legs, from side to side, over one extended leg, the other, over both. He relaxed into it, a little, until she told him to stand at the front of his mat. Then she smiled at him, the day dawning behind the window at her back. If she'd asked him to twist his body into a pretzel, he'd have given it a shot. Instead, she had him repeat vertically what they'd done on the floor. Just breathing, reaching, bending, with a few variations of lunges, all as slow and easy as their morning lovemaking. In the end, she had him lie on his back, palms up, eyes closed. She spoke of letting go, of inhaling light, exhaling dark, while she rubbed his temples with her fingertips. By the time she brought him back, had him sitting again, bending forward to, as she called it, seal his practice, he felt like he'd had a little nap in a warm sea.
Nice, she gave him a pat on the knee. Ready for breakfast?
He looked into her eyes.
They don't pay you enough.
Who?
Whoever comes to your classes.
You don't know what I charge for my classes.
It isn't enough.
I charge more for private lessons.
Grinning, she walked her fingers up his arm.
interested?
Well,
think about it,
she said as she rose.
And for now, do those neck stretches I showed you every couple hours when you're at the keyboard. Those and the shoulder rolls, for now,
she continued as they started downstairs.
Since I'm smelling spring, I'm thinking spring omelet. You can make the coffee.
You don't have to go to the trouble. You have a class.
I've got time, especially if I can come back for my massage equipment when I bring the groceries and do the house.
It feels... I feel a little weird having you take care of the house and cook and everything when we're sleeping together.
She opened the refrigerator, began taking out what she wanted.
Are you firing me?
No, I just think it feels like taking advantage.
She got a cutting board, a knife.
Who initiated sex?
Technically, you did, but only because you beat me to it.
That's nice to hear.
After washing the asparagus and mushrooms, she brought them to the board to slice.
I like working here. I love the house. I love cooking, and I get a lot of satisfaction seeing my cooking work for you. You've put on a little healthy weight since you've been eating it. I like sex with you. Why don't we say if any of those things change, I'll let you know, and we'll deal with it. If you decide you don't like how I take care of the house, or cook, or don't want to have sex with me, you let me know, and we'll deal with it. Fair enough?
More than.
Good.
She got out a frying pan, olive oil, smiled.
How about that coffee?
14. He couldn't call time with Abra a routine, but he supposed they developed a kind of pattern over the next few days. She cooked, either at Bluff House or her cottage. They walked the beach, and he, too, began to smell spring. He grew accustomed to having food put in front of him, to having a house filled with flowers, candles, her scent, her voice, her. His work progressed to the point where he began to think he actually had something other than an escape from his own head. He read, he worked, he dragged himself into his grandmother's gym, and for a few precious days, even the idea of murder seemed to belong to another world. Then Detective Corbett came to his door, with a team of cops and a search warrant.
We have a warrant to search the premises, any outbuildings, and vehicles.
Stomach nodded. Eli took the warrant, skimmed it.
And I guess you'd better get started. It's a big house.
He stepped back, spotted Wolf. Saying nothing, Eli walked out, grabbed the kitchen phone, and took it out to the terrace to call his lawyer. Better safe, he'd learn that the hard way, than sorry. Yeah, he could smell spring, he thought when he'd finished the call. But spring brought storms, just like winter. He'd just have to ride this one out like the rest. Corbett came out.
That's quite a collection of guns upstairs.
It is, and unloaded, unfired, as far as I know, for at least a generation.
I'd appreciate the keys to the cases.
All right.
Eli went inside, wound through to the library and the drawer in his grandfather's desk.
You know damn well none of those guns fired the shot that killed Duncan.
Then you don't have a problem.
Got a problem as long as Wolf ignores evidence, timelines, witness statements, and everything else but me.
Eli handed over the keys. Corbett's face remained impassive.
I appreciate the cooperation.
Detective.
Eli said as Corbett turned to go.
When you finish with this, find nothing. If you come back without real evidence, real motive, actual probable cause, I'm going to file suit against your department and the BPD for harassment.
Now Corbett's eyes flicked just a touch of heat.
That sounds like a threat.
You know it's not.
What it is, it's enough.
It's way past enough.
I'm doing my job, Mr. Landon. If you've got nothing to hide, the more thoroughly I do it, the sooner you're in the clear.
Tell that to someone who hasn't been hounded for more than a year.
Eli walked out, got a jacket. He knew he shouldn't leave the house, but he couldn't stomach watching them go through Bluff House, through his things, through his family's things. Not again. Instead, he went to the beach. Watched the water, the birds, the kids, he realized, must be on spring break. His mother wanted him to come home for Easter dinner. He'd intended to go, to ask Abra to come with him. He'd been ready for it, primed for it. The family event, with Abra in it, the big ham Alice would bake, and his mother would insist on glazing herself, the baskets, the candy, the colored eggs, the tradition of it, and the comfort of it. But now, it seemed smarter to stay put, to stay out of everyone's way, everyone's life, until the police found Duncan's killer, Lindsay's killer. Or his own investigator found something that turned at least one key in one lock. Not that that angle was going anywhere yet. He looked up at Laughing Gull Cottage. Where was Abra? He wondered. Teaching a class? Running errands for a client or cleaning a home? Tucked into her own kitchen cooking? Or in the little room she used for making earrings and pendants? He'd been crazy to get involved with her, to drag her into this mess. Or, more accurately, let her push her way into it. She had things in Bluff House. Clothes, shampoo, a hairbrush, little bits of intimacy. His stomach clenched into angry knots as he pictured the police pawing through what was hers because she'd left it in what was his. He knew the comments, the smirks, the speculation, and worse, the guilt by association that would root in Wolf's brain. They'd search her house next if they could get a judge to sign off. The thought galled him, infuriated him, and sent him back to the house for the phone he hadn't thought to take with him. Once again, he took it out to the terrace and once again contacted his lawyer.
Change your mind?
Neil said when he came on the line.
I can be there in a couple hours.
No, no point. Listen, I'm involved on a personal level with Abra Walsh.
I already knew that, unless you're about to tell me you're sleeping with her.
That's what I'm telling you. He expected the sigh and wasn't disappointed.
All right, Eli. Since when?
A few days ago. I understand about perception, Neil, so don't bother. The facts remain the facts. I'm asking for you to keep an ear to the ground in case Wolf pushes for a search warrant for a place. Laughing Gull Cottage. She rents, but I can find out the owner if you need it. I don't want her hassled over this. She isn't part of it.
She's your alibi, Eli. The cops have squat on you for Duncan, but she's a big part of the reason they have squat. It wouldn't hurt for her to get her own lawyer. She knows how it works.
His body, his voice, stiffened. Excuse me?
Eli, you're my client. She's your alibi. Wolf insinuated the two of you were lovers when Lindsay was alive. Do you think I didn't run background on her, exactly as you'd have done in my place? She's clean, she's smart, and from all accounts she can hold her own. There sure as hell isn't a law against the two of you having a relationship, so relax. If they take a pass at her, she'll come through it. But she should get a lawyer. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Is there anything you're not telling me?
No! She brought me some damn stew, Neil, and ended up getting attacked and tossed in the middle of a murder investigation. I want to do something. God damn it, I want to do something besides just standing here.
You did. You called me. I reached out to a contact on the BPD. Wolf pushed and pushed hard for this warrant. He's about used up his currency where you're concerned. Let this play out, Eli. It's going nowhere. And the Piedmont suit is throttled back to a few mutters to reporters who bother to listen to them these days.
There are cops swarming all over my grandmother's house. It's hard to shrug that off.
Let it play out, Neil repeated, then closed the door. If they push again, they're going to get slapped with a suit. Trust me, Eli, the brass doesn't want that, the wrangling or the publicity. They'll shut Wolf down. Let me know when they're out of there.
Sure. Eli hung up. Maybe his superiors would shut Wolf down, officially. But Eli didn't believe for a moment that would stop him. Because of an emergency call for a grocery run due to a preschooler with strep, Abra arrived a bit later than she liked for her church basement yoga class. She dashed in.
Sorry, Natalie's kid's down with strep and she needed some supplies. She won't make it to class, obviously.
Even as she set down her mat, her tote, the vibes hit her. She caught the speculative looks, and more, the furious flush on Maureen's face.
Something up?
She said, casually enough, as she unzipped her hoodie.
There's police. A lot of police at Bluff House. Don't give me that look, Maureen,
Heather snapped.
I didn't make it up. I saw them. I think they must be arresting Eli Landon for killing that poor man, and maybe for his wife, too.
A bunch of police? Abra repeated as calmly as possible.
Oh, at least a dozen. Maybe more. I slowed down when I drove by, saw police going in and out.
So you think they'd send a dozen or more cops to arrest one man? Do they bring in a SWAT team, too?
I understand you'd be defensive.
Heather's voice dripped with sugary sympathy.
Considering your relationship.
Are you considering that?
Well, for heaven's sake, Abra, it's not like you've been making a secret of it. People have seen your car parked there late at night or early in the morning.
So, wondering why it takes a platoon of cops to arrest one man. One, since I happen to be with him, I know didn't kill that poor man.
Is defensive because Eli and I are sleeping together? I'm not criticizing you, honey. Oh, bullshit!
Maureen exploded.
You've been standing around here pretending to feel sorry for Abra while gleefully questioning her judgment. And you've already arrested, tried, and convicted Eli without knowing dick about squat. I'm not the one suspected of murder twice, or with police in my house. I don't blame Abra, but...
Why don't you stop right there? Abra advised. I don't blame you either, Heather, for gossiping or for jumping to conclusions about someone you don't even know. For now... Let's consider this a no-blame area, and we can get started.
All I did was say what I saw with my own eyes.
And now those eyes brimmed with tears.
I have children. I'm allowed to be concerned we may have a murderer living right here in Whiskey Beach.
We're all concerned.
Greta Parrish patted Heather's shoulder.
Especially since we don't know who killed that detective from the city, or why. I think we're better off sticking together than we are pointing fingers.
I wasn't pointing fingers. There are police at Bluff House. That PI was from Boston, where Eli Landon's from, and somebody shot him here, where Eli Landon is. I have every right to talk about it and to be worried about my family.
Choking on tears, Heather grabbed her things and fled.
Now she's the victim,
Maureen sighed. Okay, Maureen, okay. Abra drew a long breath. Let's just clear the air. Heather's upset. Someone was killed. We're all upset and concerned. I know Eli wasn't responsible because I was with him the night it happened. He can't be in two places at once. My personal life is my business, unless I choose to share it. If anyone's uncomfortable with my personal choices, that's fine. If anyone wants to cancel their classes with me, I'll issue refunds, no problem. Otherwise, let's take seats on our mats for a minute and breathe.
She unrolled her own mat, sat, when the others did the same. The fist clenched in her belly loosened a little. Though she couldn't find her center, her balance, her own sense of calm, she took the class through the hour. Maureen lingered after the class ended. Abra expected no less.
Your place or mine?
Maureen asked.
Mine. I have a cleaning job in an hour. I need to change. Good. You can give me a lift. I walked.
Sundays last night?
Toast a strudel this morning. I shouldn't have them in the house, but I'm weak.
Prepare to be weaker, Abra warned as they walked out together.
I made brownies. Damn you!
They piled into the car. I'm trying to consider the source.
The source is an idiot.
Abra sighed. She can be, but so can we all.
Idiot is Heather's default.
No, gossiping is her default, and you and I both enjoy it from time to time, and occasionally between times. I'm also trying to remember she does have kids, and tends to be overprotective by my gauge. But I don't have kids.
I do, and she's way over the top. She'd put GPS implants in her kids if she could get away with it. Don't sit there being tolerant and understanding. She crossed the line. Everybody, including her best bud Winnie, knew it. Jesus, Abra, she was gloating about seeing police at Bluff House.
I know it, I know it. Abra pulled up at the cottage with a squeal of brakes. Most of the gloat was because she got to announce it.
but there was plenty left over for Eli's misery. I'm not tolerant and understanding.
She shoved out of the car, snatched her bag, heaved the door shut.
I'm pissed.
Good, me too. Let's eat a whole bunch of brownies.
I want to go down there, Abra said as they walked to the door. But I'm afraid I'll just make it harder for him. And I want to go hunt down Heather and give her one good bitch slap. And that would only make me feel crappy after.
Yeah, but it'd feel good doing it.
It really would.
Leaving her bag by the door, Abra walked straight to the kitchen, pulled the clear wrap off a plate of brownies.
What if I bitch slapped her and you just watched?
At home, Maureen grabbed napkins while Abra put on the kettle.
Would you still feel crappy?
Probably.
Abra grabbed a brownie, bit in while she gestured with her free hand.
She thinks I'm lying about being with Eli when Duncan was killed. She had that, you poor deluded thing, I'm worried about you, look on her face.
I hate that look.
In solidarity, Maureen bit into her own brownie.
It's superior, fake, and infuriating.
If she thinks I'm lying, maybe the police do too. That worries me a lot more.
They've got no reason to think you're lying.
I'm sleeping with him.
You weren't when this happened.
I am now.
She took another bite of brownie before dealing with the tea.
I like sleeping with him.
I suspected that was why you were doing so much of it.
He's good in bed.
You're bordering on bragging, but under the circumstances, continue.
With a half laugh, Abra moved her vase of baby iris from the center of her kitchen table to the stone-colored counter, then set down the teacups.
It's really great sex.
Unsubstantiated, provide an example.
We moved the bed.
People often move beds, couches, tables. It's called rearranging the furniture.
While we were in it,
having sex? That can happen.
Abra shook her head, got up for a pen.
Here's the bed, she said as she sketched. Against this wall.
Mm-hmm.
The first time we had sex. And when we finished having sex, the bed was over here.
She drew a line, curved it, sketched in the bed.
From there to there. And turned sideways.
Munching brownie, Maureen studied the napkin.
Oh, you're making that up.
With a grin, Abra swiped a finger over her heart.
Is it on wheels?
No, it's not on wheels. The power of repressed sexual energy, unleashed, is an awesome thing.
Now I'm jealous, but I can flip that by knowing, without doubt, Heather has never moved the bed.
I'll tell you what really pissed me off. Her acting like I'm as reckless as one of those women who write to serial killers in prison, the ones who fall in love with some guy who strangled 6 women with shoelaces. I don't know how Eli deals with it. I swear, how he deals with that cloud of suspicion constantly over his head.
It must be easier for him now, having you.
I hope so.
Abra breathed again.
I hope so. I have feelings for him.
Are you in love with him?
Abruptly concerned, Maureen licked chocolate from her thumb.
It's only been a few weeks, Abra.
I'm not saying I'm in love with him. I'm not saying I'm not. I'm saying I have feelings for him. I had them the first time I met him, though I think that was mostly sympathy. He looked so wrecked, so tired, so sad, and with this awful anger under it that must be terrible to hold in day after day. And as I've gotten to know him, there's still sympathy, but there's respect, too. It takes a lot of courage, a lot of spine to get through what he's been through. And there's attraction, obviously, and affection.
I felt like he relaxed and enjoyed himself the night we hung out at the pub.
He needs people, and I think even with his family, he's felt alone for a long time.
Being alone was, in Abra's opinion, sporadically necessary for recharging self. Being lonely was a state she pitied and wanted to fix.
I've watched him relaxing and enjoying a little bit more all the time. He's got humor and a really good heart. I'm worried about him now.
Why do you think all those cops are at Bluff House?
If Heather wasn't exaggerating, I think they must have gotten a search warrant. I told you before that Detective Wolf is convinced Eli killed Lindsay. He's obsessed with proving it, and now with proving he killed again.
They have to disprove you to do that.
Maureen reached over for Abra's hand.
They're going to question you again, aren't they?
I'm pretty sure of it. Maybe you and Mike, too.
We'll handle it. And we'll all handle gossips like Heather, too. I wonder if she'll come to your next class here at the cottage.
If she does, no bitch slapping.
Spoil sport. Just for that, I'm taking a brownie for the road. If you need me, you call me. I'll be home for the rest of the day. I've got to get some paperwork done before the kids get home. Thanks.
Abra moved in for a hug as they rose.
For being just the right antidote to the idiot.
When Maureen left, she went to her bedroom to change. Two brownies before noon made her feel just a little bit sick, but she'd get over it. And once she finished work for the day, she was going to Eli, for better or worse. It took hours. When they'd cleared his office, Eli retreated to it while cops swarmed the house. Once he'd put his things back in order, he'd busied himself with calls, emails, neglected paperwork. He'd hated calling his father, but trouble had a way of leaking. Better the family hear directly than through other means. He didn't bother playing it down. His father was too smart for that. But at least he could reassure him, and through him, the rest of the family. The cops would find nothing, because there was nothing to find. He couldn't bring himself to write, not with the police, metaphorically at least, breathing down his neck. He shifted into research instead, eating away at the day by shifting from book research to research on Esmeralda's dowry. He turned at the rap on the door jamb. He acknowledged Corbett by swiveling the chair around, but didn't get up, didn't speak.
We're wrapping it up.
All right.
About that digging in the basement.
What about it?
There's a hell of a trench down there.
Corbett waited a beat, but Eli didn't respond.
No clues responsible?
If I had a clue, I'd have told Deputy Hansen.
It's his theory, and I'm told yours, that whoever broke in the night Duncan was killed dug it. And since he sure as hell didn't do all of that in one night, it wasn't the first time he'd gotten in.
It's a theory. Irritation flicked over Corbett's face before he stepped in, closed the door at his back.
Look, Wolf's on his way back to Boston. If he comes back, unless he comes back with conclusive evidence against you, he's on his own. There's nothing tying you to Duncan's murder at this time. The only connection is person or persons unknown hired him to report on your movements. I don't see you for it, for all the reasons discussed in our last meeting. Added to it, I've got no reason to doubt Abra Walsh's word, even though my investigative powers tell me she's spent a few nights here since, and not on the sofa downstairs.
Last I checked, sex between consenting adults was still legal in Massachusetts.
And thank God for that. What I'm telling you is you're not on my radar for this. The problem is nobody's on my radar for this. Yet. What I've got is a break-in, an assault, and a murder in the same night. That makes me wonder. So, if you do get a clue who's been digging down there, it'd be in your best interest to let me know.
He turned for the door, paused, turned back to face Eli.
I'd be pissed off if I had a bunch of cops going through my house all day. I'm gonna tell you I handpicked them. If we didn't find anything, there's nothing to find. And I should further add that even though they were careful, this is a damn big house with a hell of a lot of stuff. Some of it may not be back in place.
Eli hesitated as Corbett opened the door, then took the leap.
I think whoever dug that trench either pushed my grandmother on the stairs or caused her to fall, then left her there.
Corbett stepped back, shut the door again.
I've given that some thought myself.
Without waiting for the invitation, he crossed over, sat down.
She doesn't remember anything?
No, she can't even remember getting up, coming downstairs. The head trauma, the doctors say it's not unusual. Maybe she'll remember, maybe not. Maybe parts, maybe all, maybe none. She could have died, and probably would have, if Abra hadn't found her. Shooting a PI's not a far reach from pushing an old lady down the stairs and leaving her to die. This is her place. Her heart's here. She may never be able to live here, at least not on her own again. I want to know who's responsible for that.
Tell me where you were that night, the night she fell.
Jesus Christ.
Let's be thorough, Mr. Landon. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember, because I'll never forget the look on my mother's face the next morning when she came in to tell me, after Abra called the house. I wasn't sleeping well. I hadn't slept well in a long time. I moved in with my parents a few weeks after Lindsay's murder, so I was there the night of my grandmother's accident. My father and I ended up playing gin and drinking beer until about 2. I guess I could have hauled my ass up here, tossed my grandmother down the steps, then hauled my ass back to Boston and settled in before my mother came in to tell me Gran was hurt and at the hospital. Ignoring the comment, Corbett took out his book, made some notes.
There are a lot of valuables in this house.
I know it, and I can't understand it. There's plenty you could basically stuff in your pockets and make a nice profit.
But he spends hours, days, hacking at the basement floor.
Esmeralda's dowry.
That's all I can come up with.
Well, it's interesting.
Any objection, if her doctors clear it, if I talk to your grandmother? I don't want her upset, that's all. I don't want my family dragged through another mess. They've dealt with enough.
I'll be careful.
Why do you care?
Because I shipped a dead man back to Boston. And as far as I can tell, he was just doing his job. Because somebody broke into this house and might have done more than assault the woman if she hadn't defended herself and gotten away. Because you didn't kill your wife.
Eli started to speak. Then whatever had been in his mind just slid away.
What did you say? Do you think I didn't read and review every word of your file? You never changed your story. The wording, the delivery, but never the content.
You weren't lying. And if it had been a crime of passion, as speculated, a good criminal defense lawyer, and you had a record of being one, would have covered his tracks a hell of a lot better.
Wolf thinks I did.
Wolf's gut tells him you did it. I think he's got a good gut. This time it's wrong.
It happens.
Maybe your gut's wrong. Corbett smiled thinly.
Whose side are you on here?
You're the first cop who's looked me in the face and said I didn't kill Lindsay. It takes some getting used to.
The prosecutor didn't think you did it either. But you were all they had. Wolf was dead sure, so they pushed until they ran out of room.
Corbett rose.
You got a raw deal. You won't get one from me this time around. You've got my number if you think of anything relevant.
Yeah, I've got it.
We'll get out of your hair.
Alone, Eli sat back and tried to sort out his mixed feelings. One cop saw him as innocent. One cop saw him as guilty. It felt good to be believed, to have the word still hanging in the air. But anyway he cut it, he was still stuck in the middle. 15. She worried how she'd find him, depressed and brooding, angry and dismissive. Whatever his reaction, she couldn't blame him for it. His life had been disrupted, again. His morality questioned, again, and his privacy shattered, not only by the police, but by people like Heather, again. She prepared herself to be understanding, which might mean firm and matter-of-fact, or supportive and sympathetic. She didn't expect to find him in the kitchen, working at a cluttered island, with a look of exasperation on his face and a bulb of garlic in his hand.
Well, what's going on here?
Chaos, which is apparently what happens when I try to cook. She set aside the plate of brownies.
You're cooking?
Try is the operative word. She found the trying both sweet and positive.
What are you trying?
Some chicken and rice thing. He shoved at his hair, scowled down at the mess he'd made. I got it off the internet under Cooking for Morons. She came around the island, studied the printout of the recipe.
Looks good. Want some help?
He turned the scowl on her.
Since I qualify as a moron in this area, I should be able to handle it.
Great. Mind if I get a glass of wine?
Go ahead.
Hey, you can pour me one, too, in a freaking tumbler.
Though she found cooking relaxing, she understood the frustrations of the novice, or very sometimes, cook.
What inspired this domestic bliss?
She asked as she got out glasses. Wine glasses, despite his comment. His eyes narrowed as she slipped into the butler's pantry for the wine.
Are you looking for a kick in the ass?
Actually, I'm looking for a nice Pinot Grigio,
she called out.
Ah, here we go. I hope I'm invited to dinner,
she continued.